This is New England Public Radio's Jazz Beat. I'm Tom Reaney with a podcast edition of my jazz blog, which you can find at nepr.net. Today's Jazz Beat focuses on Django Reinhardt's encounters with Duke Ellington and his orchestra in the 1930s and 40s. Duke Ellington played in Paris during his first European tour in 1933, a year before Django Reinhardt and Stefan Grappelli became the nucleus of the quintet of the Hot Club of France. By 1939, when Ellington returned to the French capital, Grappelli had moved to London, where he waited out the war, while Django remained in Paris and became a hero of the French underground. While they were there in 1939, the Ellingtonians Rex Stewart, Barnaby Gard, and Billy Taylor recorded five titles with Django, including Stewart's delightful original Montmartre. Following the war, Django came to the States and toured with the Ellington Orchestra. In Music Is My Mistress, Duke Ellington's memoir, he wrote, "Among those I think of as citizens of Paris was Django Reinhardt, whom I regard as among the few great inimitables of our music. I always said that Django was a great believer because a believer is an optimist who thinks of tomorrow, and one of Django's favorite sayings was, 'Tomorrow, maybe.'" As it happened, Django anticipated a hero's welcome upon his arrival in New York in 1946 and was so certain that American guitar makers would greet him with freebies and endorsement offers that he didn't even bring a guitar. That was a misprojection, and to add to his disappointment, all of the advertising for Ellington's tour had been created before Django was added to the bill, so his appearances resulted in little advance publicity or notices. But Django's biographer, Michael Dregney, says that while the trip was a mix of cruel disappointments and great successes, it inspired him to create some of his most stunning music upon his return to Europe. Here's some of what Duke and other Ellingtonians remembered of their U.S. encounter. Ellington said, "Django was available, and I said, bring him. So we added him to the concert program for kicks. He's a great man. He's available. What the hell? I want to hear him myself. I don't care if anyone else wants to hear him. So we had this luxury sitting before us every night. We would just hit him with a pin spot of light, black out the whole stage. He'd state some theme. Every night it was a different theme. He'd play these wonderful things and just sit there in that one soft spot and just play and play. It was a gas. Django is too much, man." The trombonist Lawrence Brown said, "Ah, Django, that was the first time we ran into a real terrific guitar player. Django didn't have but three fingers, and he would do impossible things with those three fingers on guitar. He didn't stay over here very long, but oh yes, he really registered with the American audience." Sonny Greer recalled coming face to face with Jim Crow in Django's company. "I remember one time we played a concert in Pittsburgh," said the Ellington drummer. "He say, 'Come on, Sonny, we go have a drink.' I say, 'All right.' So we go to this high-class joint. We stand at the bar. Cat don't pay him no mind. So, you know, Django hot. So he knocks on the bar. 'Service.' And the guy says, 'I can serve you, mister,' but he wouldn't serve me. What'd he say that for? I had to drag Django out of the bar. He wanted to create a scene. I said, 'Oh, man, it's nothing. Forget it.' He says a lot in French. I don't know what he was saying, but I know it was hot." Only a handful of air checks exist from the tour that Django made with the Ellington Orchestra. Here he is with Duke in Chicago playing Honeysuckle Rose. Thank you. Ellington's second European tour brought his orchestra to Paris on April 1, 1939, to begin a 34-day, 28-concert whirlwind of activity. A couple of days into their Paris stop, Duke's cornetist Rex Stewart was taken by Hugues Canancier to hear Django play at a Montmartre nightclub where he was in a battle of guitars with Henri Salvador and Oscar Alemán. With a trio like that, it's little wonder the jam made a strong impression on Stewart. In his autobiography, Boy Meets Horn, he wrote, "The air was electric, the champagne flowed, and the magic of the moment is firmly etched in my memory." Canancier and Charles Delaunay, who had co-founded the Hot Club of France 5 years earlier, were keen on producing a record with the visiting Ellingtonians. With Duke already under contract, they approached Stewart about making a session with Django. In addition to his numerous recordings with his quintet of the Hot Club of France, Reinhardt had already recorded with the jazz greats Coleman Hawkins, Vinnie Carter, Eddie South, Dickie Wells, and Bill Coleman, and his renown was well established on the American scene. As Delaunay put it, "Every great black musician who visited Paris asked for Django when I offered them a recording date. It didn't take me long to realize that any time we did not have Django in the rhythm section, the session was unsuccessful." Here is Django with the quintet of the Hot Club of France, Stefan Grappelli on violin, playing the Ellington standard, "It Don't Mean a Thing." Recruited two Ellington colleagues, the clarinet player Bonnie Bigard and bassist Billy Taylor, for the session. Despite its hastily assembled nature, Gunther Schuller, writing in his monumental history, The Swing Era, hailed the session as extraordinary, soulful, among the finest achievements of jazz, crammed with an array of astonishing details. The language barrier was of no consequence either. "I was so overawed by Django's virtuosity," Stewart said, "that it never occurred to me there would be any communication problem, despite his not speaking English. And I was never so right. The gypsy picked up on the harmonies just as though he had written the music. A gesture toward the brandy bottle was all that we needed, and everybody understood everything." Stewart added, "When Django played, his savage rhythmical impulses and tender romantic nuances were underscored by his driving, rock-steady beat. Django, in my opinion, was to the guitar what Louis Armstrong was to the trumpet or Art Tatum to the piano. He inspired the playing and thinking of countless guitar players all over the world, but he confounded the critics, who couldn't exactly label his work and were antagonistic to this gypsy with a song in his soul." Rex Stewart and his feet warmers, as the group was billed, recorded Five Sides on April 5, 1939. While Barney Bigard deploys brushes on a newspaper to affect the sound of a snare drum on a couple of tracks, the music has an airy, subtly propulsive flow, more typical of chamber jazz than of the hard-swinging small group recordings that Stewart and other Ellingtonians were making back in the States. Besides the up-tempo treatment of the Vincent Newman standard, "I Know That You Know," there's little in the way of savage rhythm here, though Gunther Schuller was quick to point out that there's nothing lightweight or effete here either. He adds, "Whenever jazz might be called upon to demonstrate to its skeptics that it need not be and is not necessarily a loud, raucous music, these tasteful performances provide perfect, irrefutable proof." Thank you. Stewart composed the other titles on the date, Montmartre, Solid Old Man, Finesse, and Low Cotton. Finesse earned him the French Grand Prix for the best composition of 1939, and Schuller considers it the most remarkable in its effect, considering the simplicity of means employed. Four simple guitar chords, ingenious in their juxtaposition, introduce a quietly impassioned Stewart theme statement, glowing in tone and embellished here and there with the most wondrous half-valve timbral colorations. Its wonders notwithstanding, Finesse later became a sore spot for Stewart. It wasn't the first tune to which he claimed an unacknowledged composer credit. In Boy Meets Horn, the trumpeter says that he wrote the bridge to Stompin' at the Savoy back when he was leading a stomp band at the Empire Ballroom on Broadway in the early 30s. Edgar Sampson, who with Chick Webb and Benny Goodman has long been credited as a co-composer of the swing-era anthem, was Stewart's arranger at the Empire. Out of our rehearsal sessions, many a tune was born, Blue Lou, Stompin' at the Savoy, and a few others that became famous in later years were our creations, Stewart wrote. I am particularly sorry that I was not given credit for the bridge of Stompin' at the Savoy. How I regret not having that standard included in my ASCAP catalog. As for the Feet Warmers date and the fate of Finesse, he wrote, that particular session was such a happy combination of musical inspiration and understanding, such a thoroughly happy blending of talents, that in later years it was hard to reconcile it with the events that ensued. The chain of events started on the band's return to New York. I loaned my copies of the Paris date to my old buddy Brick Fliegel because he was also a guitar man and I knew that he would enjoy Django's artistry. So far, so good. That is, until he loaned my records to Steve Smith, who at the time operated a label, HRS, Hot Record Society. The next thing I knew, HRS had my Paris date on the market, only it had been retitled Ellingtonia. Well, you can bet I was furious at this type of double dealing. I bitched and sputtered, but did nothing about it. Subsequently, my friendship with Brick was never the same. Then farther down the line, after my pal Billy Taylor had left the band, Johnny Hodges made a record of Finesse, but this time it was called Night Wind and was credited to my boyhood buddy Billy Taylor. And that is why truth may well be stranger than fiction. The Billy Taylor whom Stewart is referring to here was a bassist with Duke Ellington, not the renowned pianist Dr. Billy Taylor. Here is Finesse. Rex Stewart returned to France in 1948 for a tour of the hot clubs. While there, he treated himself to side trips to the Champagne wine country, the legendary cathedral in Rouen, Notre Dame, and a walk along the Seine. Most important of all, he wrote, I indulged myself in something I had longed to do, attend class at the famed Cordon Bleu cooking school. He later put this training to use as the chef owner of a restaurant near Bennington, Vermont. During the Paris sojourn, he lectured on jazz at the City University and hosted a radio show, an occupation he would resume at a station in Troy, New York. Stewart died in 1967. In the last few years of his life, he contributed a series of articles to Downbeat, The Evergreen Review, and Melody Maker that were later anthologized as Jazz Masters of the 30s. Stewart's witty recollections and affectionate portraits of his colleagues, combined with what Jazz Masters editor Martin Williams calls amazing powers of observation and perception, resulted in what is still the only substantial jazz history written by a major player that is not directly autobiographical, though in the superb memoir Boy Meets Horn, Rex Stewart saw to that too. Here is Shango Reinhart with the Duke Ellington Orchestra in their 1946 concert tour performing a blues riff. For additional features on Rex Stewart and Shango Reinhart, visit the Jazz on the Mode blog at NEPR.net. For additional podcasts from New England Public Radio, visit NEPR.net or Apple Podcasts. Thanks to Katie Wright for production assistance. For Jazz Beats, I'm Tom Reaney.